The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Matt
Media Productions. You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when, why. Why It Ended with Robbie E. and Matt Coon.
Hey, so we are back another week. It's hashtag Why It Ended Wednesday. You know, Matt, do you even know what a hashtag is?
I think for me, it's like the sharp sign. In music, there's a flat sign and a sharp sign. The hashtag is the sharp sign, I think, like the number sign. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't think you're cool enough to know. So you make fun of me for not knowing stuff, and I don't even think you properly know what a hashtag is.
Well, I'll tell you what. I do know that we had a great show last week with Jimmy Jacobs. What a great interview. It's so much information. If you haven't heard the Jimmy Jacobs interview and you heard all about the backstage stuff at WWE and about how he left and what an engaging dude.
Yeah, he's super cool. And it was cool to get it, like I said, telling him a different perspective of, instead of having a wrestler on, someone from who was backstage right in the shows, it was just different. So I even learned a lot listening to him. And he's a cool dude to talk to.
And people are talking about our Jimmy Jacobs interview, but they're also talking about our Patreon, and we have a bunch of people signed up already. And those that did got this interview, I want to say 5 days ago, and we're going to put up another show before Friday, and we're going to start getting all that bonus content up. It's taking me a while to get it all together, but we're going to get all the unedited interviews up for our Patreon members. Just go to patreon.com/whyitended. What's going on in your life, Robbie? How is the Robert Strauss brand doing?
Well, it is going good. And this weekend with my buddy Cam Zagami, we're the Northeast Wrestling Tag Champs, and we're going to be wrestling Ryback and Jerry the King Lawler.
Wait a second. Aren't we supposed to do that at the end of the show? Are you doing that at the beginning of the show now? Is that what we're doing?
I don't know. You asked me what I'm up to, didn't you?
I did. Well, I'll tell you what's coming up today, and is an interview with James Ellsworth. Now, James Ellsworth has been in the news a little bit, and there's a lot of little talk that he might be going back to WWE soon. What are you looking forward to from hearing from James Ellsworth?
Well, I've known him for years when he was on the Indies before he went to WWE. So I kind of know his story, but I don't know it in full detail. So as always, I want to hear exactly how it went down from being just a guy that was there to being a mainstay in WWE, because it's a crazy story.
Well, it is an absolutely crazy story, the most unlikely of stories. And coming up right after this on Why It Ended, James Ellsworth. Why It Ended with Robbie E. is heard by thousands of wrestling fans every single week and tens of thousands of men between the ages of 25 and 44. And not only can you advertise to those fans by contacting us at whyitendedmail@gmail.com, but you can sponsor the whole show. Why It Ended by Robbie E. sponsored by you? Sure, just go ahead and contact us today at whyitendedmail@gmail.com and let your customers know about you. So joining us now is a man that you know from Raw, SmackDown, and a big headline tour with the WWE, and you know him as James Ellsworth. James, how you doing, man?
What up, dudes? Glad to be on your podcast here. Heard a lot about it.
Hey, thanks for doing this, bro. I for us knowing each other as long as we have, kind of, because I think we probably first met, I don't know, maybe like 10 years ago or something, but we really only have gotten to know each other well over the past few months, right?
Yeah, we've got a chance to hang out here because I see you more than I see my family, it feels like, at all these shows.
Matt, we've literally seen each other probably like 7 or 8 weekends out of the last like 10, and we even went to a restaurant together in Nashville. Where, you know, one of those restaurants, it's like a chain restaurant where you go in and the waiters and waitresses are supposed to be super mean to you?
Yeah.
We went in there and they weren't that mean to us, right, bro?
Oh, our waitress sucked, man. She just she didn't have it in her.
We wanted to get cursed off, and like they were just kind of like, they weren't mean enough.
Well, real quick though, before we get started, when Robbie, when was the first time you remember meeting James?
We probably were on a bunch of shows together, but I think the first time we ever talked was when we wrestled each other in Maryland, probably what, 7 years ago?
Yeah, that had to be 6 or 7 years ago, probably 2006, maybe 5. And never really got the chance to get to know him or anything. We just, you know, a handshake at a show. But here lately, we just it seems like we just have a lot of fun. Because we think alike. I think about the business and the way it should be done, and we're really getting along lately, it seems like.
Yeah, no, I agree. And what's crazy too is we're the same age, which means we kind of grew up watching the same wrestling, which is what my first question to you is going to be anyway. Like your childhood, how did you originally first see wrestling or fall in love with wrestling?
Oh man, like when I was 5 years old, the first wrestler I ever remember seeing was Ricky Morton on NWA, like TBS TV, when I was 5, I guess, like 1989. And he was the first wrestler I remember seeing. And then after that, I saw WWF, The Ultimate Warrior, really caught my eye, Macho Man Randy Savage. Anyone with some charisma as a kid, I really think stands out. Those are like the first three guys I remember watching on television.
You've said before that you can't remember a time that you didn't want to be a pro wrestler. For the moment you saw maybe Ricky Morton and Flair run an angle, was that right away that you just said, I want to do that?
It's all I've ever wanted to do just from a very young age. It just looked so fun to me when I was a kid. It was like a cartoon come to life. And I just, you know, from a very young age, always enjoyed it, always wanted to do it, and never thought about doing anything else.
Were you one of a kind, or did you have a lot of friends who liked wrestling also? Or were you like an outcast in school, like in wrestling?
Yeah, growing up, like middle school and elementary school, yeah, like not a lot of kids liked it. And not, you know, I would be the weird guy wearing the, like Jake the Snake Roberts t-shirt, WWF t-shirt.
So during our era of high school, me and you were actually still able to get laid while wearing an NWO shirt, as were Matt, probably when you were in high school. Matt, who was cool?
Luthez.
Yeah,
was so big.
Yeah, Matt was a virgin in high school.
Was it his gorgeous George t-shirts? They were a gorgeous George.
I actually bought one of his trademark perfume sprayers. You know, that's how far back I go. That dream you had turned into reality, and it turned into reality because you met someone named Axel Rotten, who you trained under. Now Axel Rotten, a lot of stories, a lot of legends. Now, Axel Rotten has been known as a kind of a crazy personality. What is the craziest time you can talk about that you had with Axel Rotten?
Well, believe it or not, like the demons that he had, I was just never interested in those sort of things. Like luckily and very fortunate for me, just never had an interest in doing those kinds of things that people may know that he did. But aside from that, we were a lot alike. Like we enjoyed the same movies and same music, all that stuff. But I'll tell you a funny story. We pulled up at a drive-thru. I want to say it was a McDonald's drive-thru because Axel enjoyed his McDonald's. and he we're ordering the food at the drive-up window there, and he just starts cutting a promo on me. And I look at him, what the hell are you doing? He's like, just go with it. Act like we're arguing. So I started arguing back with him in the McDonald's drive-thru, and we order our food, and we pull up to the window, and he continues to fake argue with me. And then he goes, that's it, get out of the car. And I get out the car, and he goes, man, let's start, like, fighting. Let's do a worked fight. And we started throwing worked punches at each other, like having a wrestling match right in the drive-thru at McDonald's. And he, like, winded up calling the cops and everything.
What was his reason for wanting to do that? I thought this story was going to lead to them saying they got scared, so they threw the bag of food at you and you didn't have to pay for it or something. I was going to say, that's a great trick.
No, he just, that's how he was. It's out of nowhere. He would just do stuff like that just to pop himself, to make himself laugh. But, I mean, I thought it was hysterical, too, and I went along with it. But I just think that's a unique story that I like to tell. It was just so funny. They called the police and everything. And we're like, we're just play wrestling. as my friend, man, like when he was around me, like I can't really say this about a lot of other people. Like he wouldn't bring that stuff around. And like, cause he just knew I was so totally against it. There'd be times where he was on his stuff and I wouldn't hear from him for 2 or 3 months because he just knew that it disgusted me so much. He like burned a lot of bridges doing that stuff, and he would do it in front of people in people's bathrooms, people's houses, and it like you know, because he had his demons, man. It really got a hold of him, and it sucks because, like, I don't know if anyone's ever read the Heroin Diaries. If not, it's by Nikki Sixx. Like, I always encourage people to read it. It tells you a lot about what that stuff does to you, and I read it, and it's very, very sad. But, yeah, just for whatever reason, he just, like I said, he just wouldn't do it, like, around me. And that's why you'll never hear me say a bad word about him, because he really, really respected the fact that I just despise the stuff and still do to this day.
Hey, I know I should know this, but who's Nikki Sixx? Which band?
That's, oh, my God. You tell him.
Robbie, is this a rib, dude? Like, for real? Like, I got to know, like, you not knowing what a CPA is, and you not knowing what a blueprint is, and now you not knowing that Nikki Sixx is in Motley Crue, like, is that...
Oh, Motley Crue. Because I knew it wasn't Marilyn Manson, obviously, because he's Marilyn Manson. I don't know why Marilyn Manson came to mind when he said Nikki Sixx. I think I knew that. I knew actually, it was Nikki
Sixx. So... you made a stop in CZW in 2006. What was the scene like in CZW in 2006?
I mean, my name was Jimmy Dream, and I didn't really, in 2006, I didn't really have a gimmick, or just, I just, like, really just wanted to wrestle, and, you know, I was trying to find myself back in those days, and I didn't really have a calling card or anything. I was Jimmy Dream, had a dream catcher on my tights, and went out there and wrestled.
So wait, back then you weren't wearing, because when me and you wrestled in like 11 or 12, you had the, what, like shiny pants kind of?
I had the fishnets on and the
mascara. Oh, yeah, that's it.
I was pretty Jimmy Dream. Yeah, that's when I found a little bit of a gimmick and started getting rolling a little bit on the independents. And I found that, I started doing that in 2008 or 2009.
Were you trying to be like Nikki Sixx?
Yeah, I did look like a Motley Crue member in those days, that's for sure.
See that, Matt? I know who Nikki Sixx is.
I have no idea what's going on, but I do know this, like, you started in 2002 and you're wrestling all the way through you know, 2014 before you go to WWE. What is keeping your dream going, and what is your dream at that time? You want to be a pro wrestler. You're just moving forward. But did you have, like, is it WWE or bust, and you believed you were going to do it?
Yeah, it's just the WWE was always the you know, where I wanted to be. I didn't know if that was ever, you know, a thing that could happen back in those days. I thought could happen, but I just, you know, always thought if I just keep this up and keep going, something's bound to happen. Something cool. I didn't know if WWE was the something cool, but I always knew, man, if I just keep at this, something will happen.
And did you, so while you were doing independence, you were pretty much wrestling every weekend, right?
Oh, absolutely. I would just, you know, I would make sure my calendar was full, and I've always been like that. I've always just, you know, tried to fill the calendar and try to get booked as much as possible and wrestle as much as possible.
And then when you were doing that, obviously that wasn't your only source of income. Did you have another job at the time?
Yeah, I used to work with people with special needs, trying to find them, like, jobs in the community to do.
So before we get to your WWE debut, I do have to talk about what had to be your low point, which was 7 years ago when you put Robbie E over. What was that like?
Actually,
he won it back at Grimm's, don't worry.
I was a fan of Robbie E's Oracle and Impact Wrestling. I loved the, you know, back in those days, Jersey Shore was hot, so the gimmick was hot, and I didn't mind it at all. Robbie's always been entertaining in my book.
See that, Matt? Somebody likes me. See that?
that's a short list, man. It's me and James Ellsworth, and that's it. And the other list is everybody who's ever known or met him, I think. So, you know, you started being one of Adam Rose's Rosebuds, you know, and I think a lot of people know that story. I guess my question is, did you show up hoping to be an extra? And every time you showed up to be an extra, they're like, okay, well, you can be a Rosebud, and you really wanted to wrestle? Or what was that scene like?
Man, like, I was just happy they would book me to be an extra because, you know, a lot of guys try and they just don't do it. And luckily for me, I went there once and they, you know, when I go up there, I keep my mouth shut, ears open, eyes open, you know, and they see that. And, you know, so every time they come around the area, they would book me. And, yeah, the Rosebud thing was just the first thing I got to do on television after, you know, probably a year or two of being backstage, you know, having nothing to do. And yeah, that was like the first time I ever been on in front of the camera was as a Rosebud.
And did you just go apeshit? Did you just embrace it?
Oh yeah, you get into it. You gotta get into the character of the cheeseburger outfit I was wearing. So yeah, I was having a good time.
Did you guys, when you were there, so you had went a bunch of times in the year? Because, I mean, I obviously remember I used to go, but years ago, way before anything with TNA, so, I mean, I'm talking a long time ago, and I used to go all the time, and, you know, we would work out and do matches during the day. Did you ever get any opportunities to showcase your wrestling skills, like, during the day in that year?
Yes, and still to this day, like, before SmackDown, usually they'll have the guys get in the ring and have, you know, quick 5-minute matches to show it off. And I did that a number of times.
And were any of them like good feedback, or was it like, this guy sucks, or was it this guy's great? You know, like what, anything happened?
Well, it was never any good or bad feedback. I would ask for it, and I'm like, oh yeah, it's fine. But like, again, I just don't think I was ever a guy they looked at and go, well, we're going to sign this guy one day. You know, I just okay, this kid's an okay little wrestler, but who cares? You know, that's probably what the feeling was, you know,
yeah.
It was never good nor bad. Like, it was like, oh yeah, good job, kid. That's it.
It's funny to me when wrestlers talk, they say these things that to them are kind of boring and ordinary, but to us fans are just fascinating. And I kind of want to get a little bit more into this extra role because we hear it a lot. And James, so when you showed up being extra, was it something where you called somebody? Were you paid to be there? Like, what is you were paid to stand around, or did you show up and if you were used, you were paid? Or how did that work?
No, you get paid no matter what. They're very, you know, WWE's a professional company, and if you do something or not, you're there as an extra, and you're earning a paycheck that day. Yeah, like I would, at first I hounded them for a year or two before they ever said, oh, okay, we'll come up. And, you know, and, I just was consistent about it. I would, you know, every 3 or 4 months I would email WWE, you know, and get, like, back then it was like the talent relations email, and ask them, hey, you know, you're in Baltimore area. Can I be an extra? So you just got to stay persistent and consistent, and eventually something will work out.
So, Robbie, an extra in your day, when you did this, you contacted Talent Relation, you showed up in the city, and you might work, you might not. How much do you get paid for just showing up?
Well, back in the day when I did it, it was $500 starting, and now I know that they've it's changed to about half that. I think even a little less than half that.
Really?
Yeah, times have changed. I mean, you're talking about, I mean, I was first going to do it when I was, God, you're talking 2002, you know, 2003, and I was doing it all the way through. You know, I did it for 7 or 8 years on and off, commercials and Raw and SmackDown and ECW and all that.
Wow, yeah, that's something I think us fans want to know. Hey, James, when you're there and you're an extra, whether it's when you're a Rosebud or the day that you debuted with Strowman, how dicey do you take it, like, in catering? Do you, like, go ahead and fill up your plate, or do you just, like, grab a couple grapes, or what's the deal?
Man, I eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner, no matter where I'm at.
Even the first time, like when you first walk in, I remember the first time when I was ever there, it was very nerve-wracking. You know, I was a kid. And your first time going, were you super nervous?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you walk in there and see all that for the very first time, see the bright lights and all the people walking around going crazy backstage, and all the signs up, Vince's office, and, you know, like just... you know, just finding the extra talent room so you could sit down and just hang out for a minute and catch your breath. Yeah, I remember 100%.
You'd be pooping your pants, Matt.
I play it cool.
Oh, God.
I try. So it's on one of these occasions, James, one of these occasions that you're backstage and AA, Arn Anderson, somebody you had to have grown up watching if you're watching Ricky Morton in the same era, comes up to you and asks you to throw a punch. Now, my question is, that moment, is that a moment in time in the life of James Ellsworth where Arn Anderson comes up to you and you know you're being asked for a reason?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I was like, and that was my first thought. Oh, he's asking me this. There's some importance to this. And man, I just, luckily for me, I threw a nice punch, man. Like, and I remember it. I remember, like, the extra I threw it on, a guy named Bill Bain. Robbie might know him. He's
oh, my God. I didn't know he was still existent.
Yeah. He was there as an extra, and I threw it on him. And just Arn liked what he saw. And, like, I went into the zone. I was like, I better throw a nice punch right now. Please don't let it look bad. And
was this in the ring or in the back?
I was right out ringside, like just standing there ringside with all the extras.
Was he the only one watching, or was everyone watching you throw this punch?
Well, there's, you know, how, like, there's guys around the ring, there's people going over, you know, their spots for that evening on Raw, and I don't know, I just kind of went in the zone, didn't worry about it, threw a punch.
And he liked it? He gave you the nod of approval?
Yeah, and he just like, man, he seemed kind of taken back by it. He's like, oh, not bad. He said, get in the ring. And then and Strowman was in the ring. He's like, all right, well, let me see you throw it on him. Now, that was nerve-wracking. I was like, I didn't know Strowman at that point. I was like, okay, and I did it. And he's like, you did the same punch. He goes, so I know that's your punch. He's like, because he did the same one you did on this guy out here.
Wow. So when you throw that first punch, right, do you have more pressure that you know this punch means something, or do you have more pressure that, goddamn, it's Double A who's asked me to throw a punch?
Yeah, I have so much respect for Arn Anderson, man. Like, again, like you said earlier, he's one of the guys that I, you know, watched growing up, and I just respect the hell of the guy. So I'm like, man, I just prayed in my head that this goes well. I'll throw a nice punch. Like, I, you know, that's all I was thinking. I was like, man, this better be good.
Then somebody tells you, in some way, you're going to be on TV tonight. Who told you, and what was your reaction?
Oh, again, it was Arn Anderson. As soon as I threw the punch on Strowman, he goes, all right, kid. He's like, well, you're on Raw tonight against Strowman. It's his debut as a singles wrestler, because he'd been with the Wyatts up until that point. He goes, you're going to throw two of those punches in the match. That's how we're going to start the match. And then afterwards, this is what we're going to do, when he showed me the rest of the match. And that's who told me.
Did you immediately, like, get a feeling in your stomach or shit your pants or anything? Were you nervous as hell?
Oh, I felt like crap in my pants right there. but I just kind of, like, told myself, man, you need to go in the zone here. You just need to do a good job. That's all I thought about, was like, God, just do a good job. The whole day, because, you know, this is happening around 5 o'clock. Raw goes live at 8. So I had 3 hours, you know, and I think him and I's match was at 10. So I had 5 hours to think about it. And all I kept thinking is, man, please just do a good job. Telling myself that.
All the time you see guys get brought on in a match on Raw where they get destroyed or squashed. So you had no idea in your head what would happen, like what was about to happen for the next 2 years of your life after this match.
No, not at all.
Like, you thought it was a match and then see you, bye, we're done, you know, and you were going home and nothing was going to happen.
I thought this was going to be my one WWE match that I could forever show my friends and family. Like, hey, look what I did this one time. That's exactly what I thought.
And you're defined by your promo. Your promo was a huge part of your further success and your ongoing success. And when did you find out you were going to get a little chance to talk? And where did that line come from? Any man with two hands has a fighting chance.
Well, I found out about the promo right after him and I were talking to over the match with Arn Anderson. I was getting out of the ring, and Jimmy Jacobs, who I knew a little bit from the independents, and Sterling James Keenan, who everyone knows as Corey Graves, came up to me, and I knew him well. Like, Corey Graves, like, I did a lot of shows with him, and they were just like, hey, man, you're going to get a promo. It's going to be 15 seconds. We're going to do this thing where, you know, Strowman's, like, you know, guys that he beats every week get a, you know, basically their last words. Like, reading them their last rites was the idea before Strowman would just demolish, like, local talent. And I'm like, all right, so Jimmy came to me probably an hour after he told me with the script, and he's like, hey, man, here's what you're saying, blah, blah, blah. I was like, hey, man, like, I'm punching him twice. Is there any way I could say any man with two hands is a fighting chance? I just think it's a cool line. He goes, yeah, that's cool, man. That sounds good. Just make sure it's 15, 20 seconds, and you're done. I said, no problem.
You got handed a script, and then you asked to say something different your first day ever getting a match?
Well, I said the whole script other than that line was the only thing I added. And they kind of ask you if you have any ideas. I waited until he said that. He said,
I was going to say, shit, yeah. You're already big.
Here's the factor, though. How lucky were you that it was Jimmy Jacobs delivering the script? Because you might not have been as comfortable with somebody else if it was Arn or somebody going, hey, can I say this? How lucky were you that it was Jimmy Jacobs delivering the script? Because you might not have been as comfortable with somebody else if it was Arn or somebody going, hey, can I say this?
Oh, absolutely, because, yeah, I knew Jimmy a little bit, and I was comfortable with him, and he, you know, he's one of the guys he was one of the writers there that was actually a wrestler, you know, and so if it was another writer that I didn't know, I probably wouldn't have asked. And then if Jimmy, Jimmy, to his credit, would have said, nah, man, just stick to the script. I would have never said it.
I was going to say, because Jimmy, we had Jimmy on actually last week, and Jimmy seems like the kind of guy who's just like, fuck it, that sounds good. And a lot of the other writers might not have done that.
Yeah, well, again, it goes back to him just being a wrestler and being very, very, he's so smart about the business. Man, I love talking to him about wrestling. And I just did a show with him like a month ago, and we literally sat in the locker room, him and I, for like 2 hours and just talked wrestling. And that's one guy, if you do want to talk wrestling, you got to talk to, because he's just so smart about it.
The day after this happened, like, you did a good job. You gave the great promo. You really did the best anybody could do in that situation. I don't think anybody can argue that. It started out Braun Strowman's, it really started his singles career off on the right foot. And also, you kind of developed as a meme. How much credit do you give to the meme, and how much credit do you give to your performance for being brought back a couple months later?
I give most of the credit to the fans, man. Like, they, like, really went online and kept my, like, name out there, my face everywhere, and they were having fun with it. Whether they were mocking me or not, I don't know, but they...
Who cares?
Right, I don't care. And
helped you, yeah.
Absolutely, and, you know, and, like, yeah, I just... Like I said, I was just so focused on doing a good job that day. Like, that's, I mean, all day, that's all I focused on. I didn't eat. I didn't go catering for my third meal like I usually would. it was just everything coming together, the perfect storm. And it was a day, obviously, I'll never forget.
When you got to the back, was it like that day, did they tell you how much they loved it? Or was it just kind of like, good job, later?
Oh, no, as soon as I got to the back, like, Arn grabbed me and was like, man, you made my job real easy tonight. Thank you. He said, Vince wants to see you, and which they said is, like, it's almost non-existent that he calls an extra talent over to Gorilla. And he went over there and he said, hey, kid, very good job, and shook my hand. Then Triple H shook my hand and said, good job.
So, wait, hold on. Vince called you over to Gorilla to tell you did a good job?
Yes. It's crazy.
Was that the first time you had met him?
Yeah, like, he'd walked by me a few times, like, before then, but that's the first time he shook my hand and acknowledged me at all, yeah.
And Hunter also offered his, he just went out of their way to just say, great job.
Yeah, it was just crazy. Like, I didn't expect that at all, obviously, and a lot of guys that day and that night, a lot of the, you know, guys there from Raw were all saying, man, you know how, like, that's not a usual thing for him to do that. Like, they were letting me know that, like, that's just not something he does.
Robbie, is that just a dream come true, the perfect scenario for the situation that James was in?
It's wild. I mean, like you said, he went into the match just not want to mess up, being able to just say, hey, I had one WWE match, cool, I could show my kids, you know, whatever, and, like, it turned into, you know, this whole, it's unbelievable. It really is one of those stories that people won't forget, I'll tell you that.
You probably got home and the dream came down a little bit. You go, that was fun. Maybe I'll do another show one day. At what point did you realize, shit, they want me? Did someone call you or text you, or you get an email?
Well, the next day I had to go to SmackDown, because as an extra talent, you go to all the TVs. So I went to SmackDown the next day. No one really said anything there. I think one cameraman, like, said something like, oh, hey, you're going to be a big star, huh? Like, I just thought he was joking. And the next day, it was that Wednesday, WWE called me and said, hey, we want to interview you for WWE.com. At the interview, you could probably find it on there. And they were interviewing me and just asking me about my experience and talking about my, you know, face being everywhere on the memes and all. And then WWE called me, I think it was the next day, and were like, hey, we may need you for Monday. And then day after that, they're like, yeah, well, you know, you got killed by Strowman. We can't really, you know, bring you back right away because you got to sell that beating, which made absolute sense. Then, like, it became a weekly thing where they would call me and say, hey, we may need you, we may need you, we may need you. And it took 6 weeks until they finally did bring me back.
So you were in their minds for sure. And then the next time we saw you was you were chosen as a partner with three future Hall of Famers, and also involving Miz as well. What was it like when you were told that that's what you were going to be doing, and what was it like to get back on camera again?
That day I was in Philadelphia. They're like, yeah, it's going to be John Cena and Dean Ambrose teaming up, and AJ's going to be looking for a partner, but nobody likes AJ. It's back when he was a heel. So nobody agrees to team with him, so Daniel Bryan's going to appoint you as his partner, and you go out there, and then, you know, The Miz comes out at the last minute and saves the day for AJ and beats you up, and The Miz becomes your partner. But, you know, so I came out and had my first entrance, you know, there in Philly. And so all day I was just like, man, I haven't been on TV in 6 weeks. I literally have only had one WWE match. Like, are these people even going to know who I am? Are they going to react? And I think Philadelphia was the right city for that, because they did react, and they're all a bunch of smart wrestling fans up there, and they knew what was going on. So again, another perfect scenario, it being the city of Philadelphia, who, and they would know a James Ellsworth, because they're just so, you know, just some great, passionate, smart wrestling fans.
Was this all like now coming together in your head that this is turning into something?
Yeah, I still don't know what. I'm like, man, am I going to just be like a unique character that comes back every now and then, just pops up every now and then? That was my initial thought. Maybe we'll do that with me. Maybe 4, 5, 6 times a year you'll see me. I'll, you know, and maybe they were thinking that. I don't know at first. But after The Miz beat me up, I didn't come back for a month. So that was 4 more weeks before they brought me back to do the angle with AJ and Dean Ambrose.
And then who were some guys that, like, helped you out early on and became, like, your friends early on, like, going through, like, all – because, I mean, this is a learning process for you, you know. I'm sure the hotels and rental cars and being on the road and all this stuff is so different. Like, who were guys that took you under their wing?
Yeah, like Chris Jericho, really, from day one. Like, I mean, the night I had the Strowman match, he like got my phone number from that referee I was telling you about that I know was one of my best friends. And he got my phone number from him because he had heard him and I were friends. And he called me that night after the Strowman match and just told me how good of a job that I did. And he just wanted to get me on his Talk to Jericho podcast and really, you know, learn more about me. So, and then we did the podcast in Baltimore. That was like the 6 weeks later they brought me back. The day before Philly was Raw in Baltimore, and I was an extra backstage for that. And he did the podcast backstage there with me. And just since that day, him and I did the podcast live there in Baltimore. Like, we just became good friends, and we talk all the time, and he's really, really helped me out through my whole WWE career, and even now he's still helping me out. Like, he just, you know, I got very lucky to have a friend like him, and I don't know how I'll ever repay him because he's done so much for me.
Have you ever thought about the fact that, you know, as your career moves along, right, you're involved at the very top of the card. You're actually involved in a title change. You're in, you know, involved in main events of pay-per-views. You eliminate Braun Strowman. You actually have matches with AJ Styles on SmackDown. They don't even let Samoa Joe wrestle on WWE without going through developmental. And yet here you are, thrown into the fire without any of that homogenized training you get in NXT. Did you ever think about that, the kind of big leap that you had to take from where you were to where you ended up?
Well, I always told everybody I would absolutely love to went to NXT because I think it's a great program, and it's a great NXT puts on one hell of a show. But the Performance Center, man, it's this awesome idea that they had, and to train people their way and show them how to, like, you know, work their style and work a hard cam. And it's just, man, you're getting trained by the best guys in the world, like a Terry Taylor, or even now like a Shawn Michaels. I mean, Scotty Too Hotty, Norman Smiley, just, you know, Matt Bloom, just to name a few. Like, these guys are getting the best training possible. And I would have loved to went through and done that. But yeah, I just think it was one of those unique situations where, you know, I did the Strowman match on Raw, and nobody thought any of that was going to happen. So, if they were, I mean, the feeling, I guess, is like, you know, we're going to keep this kid around and see what happens with him. They, but yeah, I would have definitely have loved to went down there and went through the ranks.
So, when you were doing, so you did this stuff with AJ, you were babyface, and then how did you feel when they told you about the whole heel turn?
Oh, man, I love being a heel. Like, so I come back to the Indies, like, you know, fresh off of WWE TV, and I still just wanted to be a heel because it's so much fun, man. You get a lot – I think, like, especially in WWE, you get a lot more personality when you first introduced as a heel. Like, and then people, like, see that personality, and it's easier to turn your babyface.
I agree.
And so I was actually happy. I'm like, all right, well, now I'll probably get to, you know, talk. Well, I talked a lot when I was a baby face there too, but I just really wanted to show my persona. And so I was cool with it.
And to that end, you know, what you did was very unusual, was getting so over as a babyface right away.
Yeah, it's just that whole underdog thing, man. And plus, I look different. Like, everything that worked against me trying to get to WWE worked for me in WWE right away.
And I've heard you talk about this, and you're always a good sport about it. But as a fan watching, I always thought it was peculiar to me how JBL would go on and on about your looks. Like, even as an underdog, he would go on and on about your looks, which I get, because he's making you more of an underdog. But then when you turn heel, he would go on and on about your looks. You've got a great humor about it. You're not a grotesque individual. You're a normal-looking dude. At some point, did you ever feel, God, that's a little too much?
No, not at all, because he would talk to me about it. And he was, like, on, like, shoot interviews, he would put me over. Like, they had, I forget what that show was on the network they had, where they would talk to, you know, they would do, like, it was, like, three guys around a table, and it'd be, like, Pardon the Interruption. The Pardon the Interruption, like, looking show that they had. I don't think it's around anymore, but they, you know, Pardon the Interruption on ESPN, it was kind of like that. And it was him and Corey Graves and Peter Rosenberg, I think. And they brought my name up, and he was just like, oh, man, that kid's doing great. He's doing good ratings on his segments. And if anybody hates him for that's on them. You know, out, like, this guy's doing real well. It was what he's doing. Like, so it didn't bother me because I knew how he really felt. And it's funny, like, you asked a good question there. Like, even when I turned heel, he would still bash me. So when they were turning me heel, he told me, he asked Vince, he's like, oh, well, should I start talking nice about him now? He's like, no. He's like, you've got a unique thing there. Why would JBL just start liking James Ellsworth out of nowhere? No, you still hate him. So he did ask.
So Carmella came to you with the idea of the whole James Ellsworth and Carmella tandem. She's an underrated wrestler, and really, you know, in person is strikingly beautiful. What was your experience working with the talented and lovely Carmella?
Oh, nothing but good things to say about her, man. She was always very sweet to me. We became friends, and we always had fun working together. And she's a very beautiful girl, and she's doing really well now. They're giving her a lot of promo time because she's a very good promo. And it's hard for a pretty girl to be a heel because you come out and the guys automatically want to cheer you because you're hot. But, like, she's really, really doing a good job of, you know, getting the heat just by the art of the promo. But, yeah, I had nothing but good experiences working with her, and I'm glad she's doing so well.
Did everyone, were you fresh meat when you got in the locker room with all the girls? Like, were they all just hitting on you and they wanted a piece?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
It's the exact same situation when Cherry joined the WWE, except it was
James. Yeah. Hey, and then real quick, and, you know, again, I think me and you have actually talked about this before, and you had said no, but did anyone, you know, being the new guy and everything, did anyone at all give you a hard time when you started?
Nah, man, like, I just think everybody was in just having fun with it, and everybody was real nice. Plus, I got, like, cool with, like, guys right away, like, guys like Bray Wyatt, who were respected in the locker room. Like, I became cool with him, like, right away, because he's an awesome guy, like, fun guy to be around. And, you know, I think other guys see that, like, oh, he's cool with Bray, so I guess he's a good little dude. And I never acted up, man. I never, like, you know me, Robbie, I don't have no ego or nothing about this wrestling stuff, you know, like, and, you know, the people, I think, there, because, you know, they just, you know, judge their own opinions and, you know, make judgment about how you're acting. And I try to act very respectful and just have a fun, good time while I'm in the arena or at any show for that matter.
I've said it before, Matt, you would get kicked out of a locker room within, like, a day. Oh, nobody would like you.
They already have signs that say I'm not allowed. They already know. They're smart people. One thing I want to talk about a little bit was the Styles Clash and you taking the Styles Clash. And it wasn't always beautiful, but you have mentioned in other interviews that you've seen, like, the YouTube videos of the guys who've really gotten hurt doing the Styles Clash. What was your experience working with AJ doing that move?
Oh, man, like, I've taken it 30 times, only messed it up once. That's what people, but it's funny how people are so ready to jump you when you do something bad, but when you do something good, they, oh, okay, that was cool. When you do something bad, they're like, ha, look, he did something bad. Like, but nah, man, it's an easy move to take. Like, and you're taught from day one to tuck your chin, per se, when you're taking bumps. And, you know, sometimes it just pops in your head, like, on that 1% move that you don't do it. And, yeah, but from there, he gave it to me off the stairs onto the floor, which if I would have did it there, that would have been the end of my career probably. But I didn't, and took it very clean on the floor off the stairs there. And, yeah, man, he's the best wrestler in the world. So he always made sure I didn't get hurt. He would make sure everybody doesn't get hurt. Robbie's worked him before. He, to me, my humble opinion, is the best guy in the world to be in the ring with.
Yeah, I mean, most of us fans would agree, and of course, just being that kind of stupid, snarky dickhead that only looks at the bad stuff that people do, because that's what wrestling fans do. What happened on that one?
Oh, just, man, like, first of all, I didn't know I was wrestling AJ Styles until that day. So, I was already very nervous. He hit me with it in practice, it was fine, nothing. But, like, when we were on live TV doing it, like, he picked me up for it. And I was set. Like, if you go back and watch it, I was set, ready to take it correctly. And then, I don't know, I just got, like, a brain fart and got, like, I was overly nervous for the match or in the ring with the WWE champion. He's a guy you really, really look up to. And, like, you know, and just I had a brain fart and talked to my chin. Because, again, you're taught from day one in wrestling school to tuck your chin when you're taking a bump. And I just kind of... It was, you know, just a natural reaction, did it, but he took care of me. He made sure I didn't die, and I thank him for that.
Well, not dying is always good.
Hey, Robbie, was that your experience working with AJ in the Styles Clash as well? Like, was AJ the best in the world when you were working with him as well? And did you have the same experience working with that Styles Clash?
Hands down. Yeah, no, he's awesome. He's the best. He's a great guy. He's the best wrestler also, I think. And he's a great human. And yeah, it is a move. It's just, I know what you're saying. It's just a move. I've taken it a million times. And you just, for some reason, you think, just because you're in a weird position, and the best thing to do is not think. So if you think, you'll probably mess it up, right?
Right. I mean, you've had some of the best wrestlers in the world. Like, it's like I said, go on YouTube, watch the 7 Deadliest Styles Clashes. You'll see some great talent, like Stevie Richards, Frankie Kazarian, like all these guys doing exactly what Roderick Strong, I think, is on there. Like, not trying to throw any of these guys under the bus. It's on YouTube, 7 Deadliest Styles Clashes. But it's just... You know, it's one of those different types of move. But I mean, AJ's very safe with it, and he does practice it with you before he ever gives it to you. And he did hit me with it in practice that day, and it was fine. You know, but like you just said, it's just one of those things where when he picks you up for it, you just don't think, you stay calm. And I just didn't stay calm that time, and he saved me. And I have thanked him 273,000 times for doing it.
So James Ellsworth turns heel, you embrace the role, the hilarious character where you're dressing up, and you know, Carmella takes you shopping and all that, and then after years of women working their way up, they finally get a women's in the bank ladder match. And who wins that match other than fucking James Ellsworth? James, what did you think when you were presented that finish of the women's Money in the Bank match where you were actually going to grab the briefcase?
Oh, man, I just thought, this is the heat Carmella and I need for our angle. This is it right here. This is what we've been waiting for. This is what we've been working towards. Like, this is going to work. Like, I just knew it would be such a backlash, and then it would draw the controversy that they wanted to draw, and boy did it. It was a great time.
How great was that catch by Carmella when you grabbed the briefcase and threw it to her?
She was a Patriots cheerleader. She saw the best football players in the world, and she knew how to make a catch.
Now, you were kind of after this, you were kind of you know, working with Carmella, and at this point, maybe over the summer of 2017, did you feel that you had a good long-standing career? Were you starting to feel comfortable? I've heard you say maybe you got a little too comfortable.
I think I did get a little too comfortable, just like, you know, as far as, all right, well, I'm here and this is what I'm doing, and maybe kind of took the pedal off the metal a little bit. Like, I mean, I always cared and I always wanted to do good, and always I was very passionate about what I was doing, but man, maybe I just thought, okay, this will last a while. This is cool. She got the briefcase, and you know, we're in a good spot right now. So maybe I got comfortable in that sense.
So what? How did this and how did this lead to the end of James Ellsworth in the WWE? What exactly happened? Was it your contract had expired, or they told you, like, what went down?
Well, from day one, man, like I tell people, like I was just something that happened. Like, I wasn't a guy that they were ever looking at to hire. So, you know, I have no answer for that other than my guess is, like, they were just kind of winging it with me the whole time, you know. Like, So maybe like once the Carmel and I thing, you know, once that ended, they're probably like, all right, what do we do with this guy now? Like, he's, you know, and they always told me good job. I'm doing a good job, this and that. And maybe they were just kind of, I have no answer why it ended, like, other than maybe they were like, all right, well, this is it for now. We have nothing else for him to do. Maybe that was it.
So when you get the text and then you get the call from Mark Carano, it was a shock to you, right?
Well, yeah, like when he called me, I didn't think at all that's the reason why he was calling me. Like, Mark, he was always good to me while I was there. Like, he treated me very well. And he was calling me. I just thought maybe I forgot something at the arena, or maybe he needed me to do an appearance. And when he called and told me that, I was shocked. I was like, oh, like.
Was right this now? The night right after a taping or something?
Yeah, it was the day after SmackDown. We were just on a 16-day tour of the United Kingdom. And then we did SmackDown back here in the States in Charlotte, North Carolina. Then I flew home to Baltimore the next morning and, yeah, got the call that morning.
And then what did you do on SmackDown the night before?
The only thing I did, we were, that was like the SmackDown before the Survivor Series. So like Shane McMahon was rallying the troops. So I was kind of like part of the troops that he was rallying, in a segment. And yeah, that's all I did. Cause that was the week before is when, I had the match with Becky, and then Carmella kind of attacked me after I lost to Becky. And, you know, and I think the thinking there was, man, why does Carmella really need Ellsworth anymore? She has the Money in the Bank contract. Like, why would she need him? She has a guaranteed, contract at a title that you can use at any time. Maybe that was the thinking. I don't know. This is just all, you know, out of my head. So
what was your first move after you got the call? Like, were you depressed for a day or two, or did you immediately say, all right, I'm going to utilize this and take the name I made and go make some money?
Well, yeah, those were all my thoughts. Everything you just said, I thought about within the first 35 seconds. It's just, you know, it's a hard call to get, because that's your dream job and you're there and they're telling you good job and you're having fun and you're making friends and you're making money and you're loving like performing. But man, the way I look at it, I was happy that it happened, not upset that it ended. And, you know, I think one day, you know, I'll find myself in a good position again.
Of course, you were around, you know, at a peak time, and people may not realize you're only how old are you?
I'm 33, be 34 this year. Yeah.
33 years old. So a lot of future left. It definitely hasn't ended for James Ellsworth. If you were to kind of choose your own path from this point, what would you want to do if it was up to you?
Oh, man. Well, you know, WWE's always, since I was 5 years old, been the place I wanted to be. And, you know, even though I've already accomplished that, like, I'm not content. I want to go back and do more. I want to make more memories and, you know, like more. Like, I had a lot of good memories there. Like, I've done stuff that I think fans won't forget, but I'm going to go back there and create more of that. So hopefully one day that'll happen. It just remains to be seen.
Have you been staying in touch with WWE?
Oh, well, you know, I have friends there. And, so you stay in touch with your buddies and all that. Like, as far as the office goes, I try not to bother those guys, you know. You know, we'll just see what happens in the future. And like I said, I have nothing but good things to say about them. I was very, very thankful for the opportunity. And yeah, I just can't be mad at that, man. That literally just happened out of nowhere, me being there and, you know, finding myself in the ring with AJ Styles and finding myself wrestling at Madison Square Garden and then being a part of WrestleMania. Like, all that stuff means a lot to me, and I'm very thankful and very happy I got put into positions to do stuff like that.
And wrestling is now your full-time job, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm like every week. Like, I'm still on a WWE like schedule. Like, I'm 3-4 times a week, and then sometimes I'll go on 10-day tours. Like I just did a UK tour about a month ago. And it's my passion. It's what I love to do, and I'm having a blast on the independents. The independents are very strong right now. There's a lot of work. Like Robbie, he does really well. I tell him all the time, I appreciate his hustle on the independents. And you know, if you're good at it and you know what to do, you can make a good living at it. And right now, I've been on the independents going on 4 months, and it's been very, very good.
And certainly your life is much different now because of this experience than it was the day that you showed up and you were told you were going to wrestle Braun Strowman.
Oh, absolutely. It's, being there changed my life for the better. and put me in positions. Because of WWE, I'm in this position on the independents to make a living on the independents. I would have never been able to do that before, and that's another thing that I do realize. It's I'm making a living still off of what WWE gave me.
Well, that's great. I just have one more question. It's something I think a lot of fans want to know. When Braun Strowman had his mystery partner situation for WrestleMania, that was going on for a while, and my son turned to me and he said, I think it's going to be James Ellsworth. Did anybody contact you from WWE about doing that? Was there interest in you doing that with them at any time?
No, man, but I was thinking just like you guys, like, man, what if they pick me? Wouldn't that be cool if I'm just like sitting in a crowd eating a hot dog and he's like looking through the crowd and he finds me, which was cool because like at the spot, he was looking through the crowd. But, like, you know, weeks leading up to that, I'm like, what if he's just looking in the crowd for somebody and I'm just sitting there eating a hot dog and he grabs me out of the crowd? I, like, spit out my hot dog. And so, man, I was just like, you know, and then I had a lot of tweets. And then that weekend at WrestleCon, WrestleMania weekend, so many fans coming up to me like, man, are you going to be Strowman's partner? And I would just tell him, I don't know, man. That's why you tune in, because you just never know.
Man, if he would have seen you eating a hot dog and the camera would have panned to you, the roof would have blown off the place.
Well, you never know. I mean, I appreciate that. I would hope that's what would have happened, but you never know how people are going to react. So, but it would have been cool. But, dude, like I said, I try to be a positive guy, man. Like, one day I think something cool will happen, and I'm just going to be patient, wait for it.
Well, it's definitely worked for you thus far, being a patient guy and doing things the right way, staying clean, believing in yourself, working hard. Robbie, I think the wrestling world is arms wide open for James Ellsworth. What do you think?
Yeah, I think if people didn't know your story and know how this all went down, they're going to be pretty impressed, because it's definitely to have your first ever WWE match and then be greeted when you come through the curtain that Vince wants to talk to you and Triple H is saying good job. I think that's pretty amazing. So there's a lot of jelly people out there that are listening to this.
Right, yeah, I when I was on Talk is Jericho, like right around when all that was happening, I told that story, and Jericho even said on the podcast, he's like, just to let you know, he's like, that just doesn't happen a lot, and he's like, I know it did happen, and it's just so cool, you know, that happened to you. He's like, I bet you just felt like, man, you really accomplished something, and I did, man. Like, I remember getting in the car that night, and thinking, man, I just shake Vince McMahon's hand, and did he just tell me good job? Because Vince McMahon, like, he's our Walt Disney, like us in the wrestling business, or if you're a wrestling fan, Vince McMahon's our Walt Disney, you know, like he's our creator and he's our, you know, guy that everyone like looks to. And man, it was such a cool moment. I'll never forget that.
Is Walt Disney still alive?
I think he's like frozen in a box somewhere. Ain't that the story?
He's a real dude, right, Matt?
you met him, right?
Is he a real guy?
Yeah, he's a real guy, Robbie. So James Ellsworth.
No, is he a real guy or no?
Yeah, he's a real guy.
How was Vince McMahon Senior? Like, was he cool?
Oh, Vince Senior was the best. Moolah was hot. Anyway, so James Ellsworth, thank you so much for joining us. How can people get a hold of you online, social media, and of course to book you if they can on your very, very busy schedule?
My Twitter is @RealElsworth. Instagram is JamesElsworthWrestling. If you want to book me for a show, it's bookelsworth@gmail.com.
I was going to say, awesome, dude. Just, thanks for doing this. And again, I think everyone's going to love hearing this once-in-a-lifetime story.
It's been great, man. And Robbie, I'm sure I'll see you soon. If not this weekend, I'll probably see you Monday. Yeah. I'll see you once a weekend, right?
Well, Robbie, we asked the questions, and we asked the question if he's coming back. I think he played it a little closely. What did you think about our interview with James Ellsworth?
I mean, I thought it was great. I thought it's nice that we have a story on that's, you know, super positive. There's no bad stuff going on with him. He seems like he's still in a happy place. And what's really cool is, like, it's just anything can happen in wrestling. This guy was straight up, I mean, he admitted it, a nobody.
He was just there as an extra eating catering, and he somehow got turned into a WWE superstar. Anything could happen.
Anything could happen. He made it happen, but there's a lot of things that fell into place to make it happen for him, too. I thought it was a great interview. I think he's a great story. But speaking of great stories, what's going on in your life these days, Robbie?
Well, you know, the Robert Strauss brand is still every Wednesday on Twitch for House of Hardcore. And this weekend, you can catch me in Jackson, New Jersey at Six Flags Great Adventure, which I'm happy about because it's actually in my home state. And I'm teaming with Cam Zagami. We're the tag champs there. We're going to be wrestling Jerry the King Lawler and his tag partner, Ryback.
Oh, my goodness. Wait a second. Ryback? You're wrestling Ryback?
This Saturday.
Well, that's going to be a little awkward next week, because do you know who we're interviewing next week?
I already do, and I'm already scared.
You know, I might even make the 4-hour drive up to Jersey myself to see how far Ryback can throw you. But
yeah, you would.
And we're going to do that interview with Ryback, and we're going to find out why it ended. And if you want to hear it a little bit earlier, just jump on our Patreon, patreon.com/whyitended. If you want to buy a Why It Ended t-shirt, you can go to prowrestlingtees.com/whyitended. Check out our YouTube at whereitended.com. And Robbie, what are your 75 handles for all your social media?
Well, for Twitter and Instagram, it's at Why It Ended for a show. And then for myself, it's at Robbie E. Impact. Thank you so much, everyone that signed up for the Patreon. You know, we bust our butt to make this show great, and you guys are awesome fans. So anything you're giving us is really just helping the brand a lot, and we appreciate it.
Absolutely. And of course, you can check me out on Twitter at Matt Coon Music. Also on Instagram with my one picture at Matt Coon Music. And
yeah, of course, you need more.
I do. I'm not an attractive person, so it's hard. I'm just going to take pictures of food.
Yeah, or just take a picture of your hand or something.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Or your microphone or your sound equipment. Or just pretend, you know, take a picture of somebody else and say he's you.
Yeah, of course, and take a picture of your hand, but don't forget to go to stopusingyourhand.com for our awesome sponsor. And make sure to tune in next week to Why It Ended.
Nice, that was good.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.